From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the moon landings. Why are some so skeptical? Here's what's happening. The Secretary of State, Bill Blinken, has announced that the United States has delivered written responses to demands made by Russia, saying that it will be up to the Kremlin on how they want to proceed amid heightening tensions between Moscow and Ukraine. Russia has listed a list of demands, including a promise to not admit Ukraine as a member of NATO and to withdraw troops from the region, even as Russia continues to amass troops near the Ukraine border, increasing fears that Moscow will order an invasion of its neighbor. We shall see. Nuke-armed North Korea fired what appeared to be two ballistic missiles into the sea off the East Coast. It would be the sixth round of missile tests this month. What are they up to? The Federal Reserve has signaled it would soon raise interest rates for the first time in 3 years, paving the way for a March liftoff as policymakers seek to keep prices under control and combat the hottest inflation in nearly four decades. Registered investment advisor Mish Sedlock with us. Mish, it's going to happen eventually, isn't it?
It sure is, and the Fed is way behind the curve. They essentially made the same comment today that they made in December and they made in November, that it would soon be appropriate to hike rates. Now, meanwhile, they're still expanding their balance sheet, and they're going to be expanding their balance sheet next month. Even if they wanted to delay these hikes, George, the very least they could have done is stop their balance sheet expansion. These guys, despite massive inflation that everyone sees, have been on autopilot. They announced their policy, and they stuck with it, and now they tell us they're going to be data dependent. Well, how can we believe that, George, since they're not looking at any of the incoming inflation data, and they haven't for at least a half a year? In the Q&A, someone asked the Fed, Jerome Powell, about asset bubbles, and he said that asset prices are somewhat elevated, right? Unquote. I think these guys are seriously delusional. This is one of the biggest bubbles ever. Margin debt is at an all-time high. He sounds just like Bernanke did when Bernanke denied that there was a housing bubble, and before that, Alan Greenspan denied that there was a dot-com bubble. Greenspan believed in this big productivity miracle. So these guys say they're going to look at all of this data. Meanwhile, they are ignoring all of the data, and more importantly, they are ignoring this huge asset bubble that they created that's now, I believe, ready to pop.
And what about the stock market, Mish?
I think that this decline has just started, George. You know, I've been a bear for a long time, but also I did not expect this massive QE and what it meant to the stock market. GDP is coming out tomorrow, George, and I think the number is going to look hot. But actually, if you look beneath the surface, the Atlanta Fed came out with their estimate today. And they're estimating, 6.5%, which is huge. But actually, if you look at that, most of it is an inventory build. 4 points of that are an inventory build. Real final sales, which is the true bottom line estimate of GDP, is about 1.9%. Now, we won't know the numbers until tomorrow, but that headline number is going to look pretty big. Meanwhile, the retail inventories rose the most on record in December, and that's at a time when retail sales actually fell 2% in December. So what's going on here is all these corporations are rushing to stockpile their shelves just as the economy is about ready to head lower and just as the Fed is starting to hike rates. That's how backwards the whole scenario is, George. What a mess, and the Fed's responsible.
Keep your eyes on it for us, Mish. Thank you. Scientists during the 1970s used a computer with observations on changing trends to predict exactly when society would collapse. The scientific observation was carried out by a group of scientists from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology more than five decades ago. According to their findings, the prediction made was that the society would crumble near the midpoint of the 21st century in 2040. Older adults who feel particularly tired after activities such as light housework or after a 30-minute walk may be at an increased risk of dying over the next 3 years, according to new research. Scientists from the University of Pittsburgh found that older individuals who displayed high levels of exhaustion after these activities were more than twice as likely to die within the next 2.7 years compared to their peers experiencing less exhaustion. A food firm in Georgia is on notice from the FDA for serious violations after inspectors found listeria in the company's production facility. The warning letter goes out to the Greenwood Ice Cream Company of Georgia. Let's check in with food safety coach Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, these things are happening way too often, aren't they?
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Well, in this case, if you take a look at the warning letter, and it's quite interesting and revealing that the FDA was in there and they've been doing some testing and they were finding listeria in about eight different locations inside the facility, and they had a lot of issues with the company not complying with their recommendations. And listeria is kind of a bacteria virus that is like into the, it hides in cracks, and it hides in places where it's not so easy to clean. It hides in under wheels and in drains. So this is where they found, the positive indications of listeria. They even, beyond just the listeria, there were also concerns about metal equipment that was kind of vibrating against each other,
mm-hmm.
and they want to recommend that they get some sort of metal detector so that they can pick up on, little pieces of metal that could be found possibly in the product.
Jeez.
So there were just a lot of issues that the FDA, wanted to make sure that they pay attention to proper sanitizing, because, again, listeria is hiding in cracks and hard-to-clean places, and there was just a lot of listeria to be found. So this warning letter runs about four pages and explains, what FDA found and recommendations on how to correct these things so they don't, give listeria, because again, remember, in the ice cream that they were making, they were pasteurizing the liquid that go in the making of the ice cream, but they were also adding ingredients after the pasteurization took place. So in other words, they pasteurized the product, so they killed, organisms that were there, and then they threw in nuts and fruit
mm-hmm.
and different ingredients that possibly could have also had pathogens or bacteria that could be harmful. So there were just a lot of issues that they need to clean up and focus on, to be more careful that they don't spread listeria and other potential pathogens, within their organization. And obviously, they don't want to have listeria, that they found, in the ice cream products.
That's food safety coach Jeff Nelkin, his website, foodsafetycoach.com. A mysterious object, unlike anything astronomers have ever seen before, has been discovered in our galactic backyard. Scientists describe the strange spinning mass, which is said to release an enormous burst of energy every 20 minutes. They believe the cosmic flasher could be a super-dense star or a white dwarf collapsed cores of stars ago with a powerful magnetic field. Interesting. More than 200 million years ago, a cataclysmic event known as the Permian extinction destroyed more than 90% of all species and nearly 97% of all living things. Its origins have long been a puzzle for paleontologists, and during the 1990s and early part of this century, a great battle was fought between those who thought that death had come from above and those who thought something more complicated was at work. Paleontologist Peter Ward, fresh from helping prove that an asteroid had killed the dinosaurs, turned to the Permian problem and came up with some stunning conclusions. That's one of the things we'll be talking about with him next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. I've got a great program for you tonight. If you're home, just relax. If you're driving, just drive all over the place for the next 4 hours where the show's going to be. Peter Ward has been active in paleontology, biology, and astrobiology for more than 40 years. Since his PhD back in 1976, he has published more than 140 scientific papers dealing with paleontology, zoology, and astronomical topics. He's an acknowledged world expert on mass extinctions and the role of extraterrestrial impacts on planet Earth. Ward was the principal investigator of the University of Washington's node of the NASA Astrobiology Institute back in 2001-06. And in that capacity, led a team of more than 40 scientists and students. One of his books includes Under a Green Sky, Global Warming, that he did in 2008. Peter, welcome back to the show. Good to have you.
George, I'm glad to hear your voice, and we're still on this planet.
We sure are, even though they're making it very difficult for us to want to stay, aren't they?
Well, everything keeps going, and more excited events happen. It's just, so every day I'm here, I'm thankful. It's a new day.
I want to get into some of the things that have happened recently, including that incredible volcano in Tonga near the Polynesian Islands. But when you were doing your work into the Permian extinction, what was that stunning conclusion you came up with?
Well, the sad part is that it wasn't an asteroid from outer space. I mean, I can understand that. We get hit by something. We saw it in the movies. That makes sense. But we found out that it was really a slowing down of ocean currents, that big, gigantic currents in the ocean are really important for maintaining oxygen levels and habitability, and that at the end of the Permian, gigantic volcanic events caused the Earth's temperature to heat to such a point that it shut down ocean currents, wind currents, all the currents. The oceans became a gigantic fetid swamp, and then death followed fairly rapidly and for a very, very long time. And the sad thing is, over the last couple of months, we're now seeing that those same ocean currents are slowing down, and it looks like they're moving towards shutdown.
Oh, boy, just what we need. Now, this Tonga volcano that erupted, which incredible force, wasn't it?
Yeah, George, that's one of the coolest things. And everybody in the earth sciences was taken by surprise in this. And yet, they shouldn't be. I mean, if you go back and look at the biggest volcanic events of the last 2 million years, almost every one of them has been out of the Pacific. The big Sumatra volcanoes, the Krakatoa volcano. This is not just the Ring of Fire. It's the ring of really gigantic cataclysmic fire, and that we have yet another episode in there. And people are trying to figure out, why was it so powerful? So this is, again, Mother Earth keeps throwing cool stuff at us, but it's another scary moment.
How does it compare to like a nuke, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, something like that?
Yeah, there was actually a very good study just a couple days ago. It was, as we know, Hiroshima wasn't the biggest of all nukes, of course. It was the very first one. And Nagasaki were both compared to the monstrosities we have now. But nevertheless, that is still a huge explosion. This particular volcano was probably 40 to 50, maybe 100 Hiroshima-sized bombs.
Wow.
As such, it's still less than what we had at Mount St. Helens. But nevertheless, compared to some of the really big stuff that's happened, this is still pretty small change. But why people are worried? It's in a neck of the woods where there have been the biggest volcanic eruptions that we've ever been able to measure. So this is why people are really waking up. What is it about that part of the Ring of Fire that creates such extraordinarily devastating volcanoes? It killed people, George. And that tidal wave could have killed more people, except we now have pretty good coastal defense. But even a 6-foot wave thousands of miles away, that's catastrophic.
What would you say is the most dangerous volcano on planet Earth, and how many do we have, active and inactive?
Well, the most dangerous of all is my favorite series, Yellowstone. I'm sorry to be giving props to a TV show. I'm really liking the 1883 show as well, but Yellowstone, underneath the Yellowstone Park,
oh,
the reason we have...
The caldera, right?
Yes, and it is, as we go back, and I ran through the numbers again today, preparation, it is bigger than anything we've ever seen in history, except for what happened in the Permian extinction. Nevertheless, it is sitting as a time bomb. I mean, this is the biggest single catastrophe that could affect our planet, at least humanity's part in it, would be Yellowstone going off. And we would have 6 weeks warning.
6 weeks, that's it?
That's it.
And they say, Peter, it erupts around every 600,000 years. Isn't it way overdue?
It absolutely erupts every 607,000. It's funny you say that. I was just doing the math again, and we're due right now.
Oh, my God. Now, when the sign starts, when we begin to see the symptoms, what do we see?
Well, you start having increasing amounts of earthquakes. And some of the scarier things are, you know, Old Faithful is very reliable. But have you noticed that there have been some hiccups in it? What we will see are a change in the frequency of the geysers, that many of the hot pots and the beautiful aspects of Yellowstone that make it so such an amazing place will start changing. We'll start getting more and more earthquakes, and we'll know that these earthquakes are because magma has begun to release in the deep, deep chambers and begins moving upward. And the reason Yellowstone is such a problem is pretty much the same reason that the Tonga earthquake was bad and that the Sumatra earthquakes, they are in places where there's enough country rock over the top that the pressure builds up, and there's no easy release. George, as you know, in Hawaii, I don't know if you've ever seen the Hawaiian volcanoes, but there's lava. It just sort of gurgles out. You never have a big explosion.
Right.
St. Helens was so catastrophic because the amount of rock sitting on top of it had a whole bunch more quartz in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of it as Hawaii's as toothpaste, and you know how a toothpaste tube gets a little crusty and then it pops out. Well, let's imagine that it's way more than a little crust, and pressure builds up. And then when it explodes, it isn't out that single cone, it's an entire region. And that's why Yellowstone is so unbelievably crazy. You've got all kinds of really thick rocks over the top of it. That toothpaste tube is packed tight.
If it goes, if Yellowstone goes, is the word if or when?
Oh, it's when. It will go. There's no stopping this stuff.
Could it happen in our lifetime?
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh, Peter. So to paint us a picture here if the thing erupts.
Well, the entire east coast east of the Yellowstone area, in North America at least, becomes uninhabitable. I mean, we're talking 10, 15, 20 feet of ash on everything. I mean, nothing escapes.
And you can't breathe. The stuff comes down and it's hot.
And you can't drive. And you will not be able to take an airplane for many years on planet Earth because these things, of course, they chew up. Look, George, I don't know if you remember, we had, 10 years ago, I think 2010, I was going to fly to Germany, and my flight got canceled because the Icelandic volcano.
I remember that. That's right.
There was enough ash in the atmosphere that it causes the turbines and turbofan engines, it makes holes in them. And so jet airplanes can no longer fly. So we would have a situation all around the world for years and years where you can't have jet flight. And any sort of airplane is going to get pitted and rusted. Propeller planes would work for a bit, but their engines would, all the intake would very quickly die out too. So it is the end of industrial civilization on the planet. So probably, I would say, two-thirds of humans would die.
Two-thirds of humans on the planet? Or just in the United States?
Oh, no, on the planet.
My gosh. So it's a planet.
We can't feed ourselves for years. No agriculture.
It's a planet killer.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Peter, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more about this. Peter Ward with us. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His book is called Under a Green Sky. global warming, the mass extinctions of the past, and what they can tell us about our future. And, you know, we have talked about the Yellowstone caldera for years now, and it is truly overdue. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with Peter Ward. Peter, the Tonga volcano, I think three people passed away. Mount St. Helens, 57 people died in that 1980 tragedy. Why was it so big?
Well, first of all, there were a lot more people close to the St. Helens explosion. I hired a plane. I flew over 6 days after the event took place. And it was just crazy what the rivers looked like and the fact that all those trees were knocked down. I mean, the fact that thing went sideways. The Tonga volcano, I think the coolest thing is that beautiful satellite image where you see the energy pulsing straight upward.
Right.
St. Helens, it blew up the side of the volcano, so the energy was sideways. And although there weren't a lot of people around, anybody in that wilderness area was killed by the ash very quickly. One of my fellow grad students, Davey Johnston, my closest friend in grad school, was on Johnston Ridge.
Jeez.
He was the first to die. And when I flew over, I knew my friend was down there. It was just really...
Was there any warning, Peter?
He could see it coming. He had a few seconds, and he knew he was going to die.
Just seconds. I mean, they didn't have, like, days to evacuate.
Well, they had known lots of warnings prior to, but no one knew that it was going to be so explosive and that it would go sideways. I don't know, George, you must have seen that crater subsequently, but the fact
that
the mountain just has a side of it gone is just so peculiar and stunning.
Now, I'm hearing stories that there's a new study out that says the planet is cooling faster than previously thought. Is that true?
Yeah, and what's spooky about this, George, is that we really, as a planet full of animals, and you and me and all our friends, we depend upon a strong magnetic field to keep all the solar radiation, bad stuff that is emitted by the sun, but is also out there in space. So as you know, we have this nice magnetic field, and it deflects all the bad radiation. Well, that magnetic field is only due because there is a liquid portion to the interior of the Earth. And if it cools enough, it's liquid because it's so hot and because of pressure. When it cools, if it solidifies, our magnetic field goes away. And if that is the case, then the Earth becomes much less habitable than it is now. I'm telling you, George, just in terms of the Earth and its history, these last few weeks have been just spectacular. A lot of stuff is coming out, and all of it is really scary.
There was a movie done several years ago, 2003, called The Core. And a group of scientists had to go down to the core to jumpstart the core, which had stopped rotating, I guess.
Now, yeah, I love that movie. I like all those cheesy
remember
movies.
Remember that?
Absolutely. Our hero had a square chin with a big dimple in the middle of it. And they had an awful machine that was sort of a spinning thing. That's so impossible. Pressure gets so high so fast, there's no way in the world any human machine with humans in it could ever go down anywhere near close, even down through the lithosphere. So that's an impossibility.
But what happens to life on Earth if the core stops?
Well, we start getting waves of radiation. Now, we know this does happen on occasion. We know the Earth's magnetic field is a big magnet, and every 100,000 to several million years, the field turns off. Not for very long, days or weeks at most, but we are bathed in radiation. And in fact, the whole Alvarez group, the people who discovered we were hit by an asteroid, Walter Alvarez was in Italy to try to discover if that 65-million-year-old mass extinction was caused by magnetic field disappearing. So people for a long time have been very worried about the field itself going down to zero or changing or even going down to zero and reversing for a short time. So this has been on the consciousness for a long time. But the new study is the first data to suggest this could actually be in the works.
Peter, we had a great guest on the program, Jim Berklin, a geologist who would predict earthquakes. And one of the things he used as a predictor was the full or new moons. Do you believe it does have an effect on the planet?
Yeah, the moon's amazing, George, as we know. One of the other very cool new studies that have just come out was a suggestion that plate tectonics is what is so important for recycling elements. The fact that we have these big volcanoes, plate tectonics causes those. So in that regard, it's kind of, I guess, a bad thing. But the good news is we would not have the civilization. You and I would not be having this talk. There would be no electronics if we didn't have a means of the Earth recycling the really heavy stuff from deep in the Earth up to the surface. Plate tectonics itself has always been thought to be simply related to the heat in the interior of the Earth. And, of course, this idea that perhaps it's not as hot or as cooling is an idea that plate tectonics itself might be changing. But another new study that came out just in the past few days is suggesting that maybe it's the moon, and the moon itself as it orbits the Earth is hugely, of course, gravitationally important. It is pulling and pulsing on the deep Earth. And the new reports suggest that perhaps without our big moon, we would not have plate tectonics. Now, I was gobsmacked when I saw this report because the implication was just hit me in the face. If it's true, if you need to have a moon that is so large relative to the size of the planet, and you know, George, there's nothing in our solar system where the moon is as large as ours is relative to us.
Right. Ours is almost like a planet size, practically.
It is. And we're like a double planetary system. And there is no indication yet from any of the exoplanets, any of the thousands of exoplanets, that anybody sees anything like what we are. If, in fact, you need a big moon to make plate tectonics, and in my book, Rare Earth, years ago, Don Bradley and I were the very first to say that without plate tectonics, you couldn't have complex life. If that's the case, you know, maybe we are unique in the universe for advanced life. That's the first time I'd ever admit that in my life. In the last few days, seeing this study, I went, oh, wow. So see, it's, you know, old dogs, we do learn some new tricks.
There's a movie that is coming out soon called Moonfall, which I think talks about the moon crashing into good old planet Earth. Is that conceivable, or is that just Hollywood?
That's Hollywood. But nevertheless, you just put some of the craziest ideas into brilliant directors, and we'll go see them. I mean, Dune itself, a lot of crazy ideas there, but great, fun movies. I think in this day and age, through COVID, boy, a good movie is a great escape, isn't it? The good news. The music,
absolutely.
We need the movies. We need that stuff.
We're going to take calls next hour with Peter Ward as we talk about the possibility of Earth catastrophes. What would you say, Peter, in your opinion, is the most dangerous pressing point? Would you say it was Yellowstone, or is there something else that would concern you?
Well, what's obviously going to happen, we cannot predict when Yellowstone will take place.
No.
When that goes, I mean, it could take place next year. It could take place in conceivably 100,000 years. I mean, this one is really a sliding scale. What we do know that's going to take place is that what we've all been suffering through, and I'm not talking about COVID, because yes, we've been suffering through that. We don't know if there'll be another pandemic. What we do know is sea level is going to keep rising. And as it does, it is going to impact human civilization in really strongly and quite often devastating ways. There's no getting around it now. There's just too much latent heat. We've heated up the Earth just too much to back away from these big climate changes we're seeing. And the number one thing that scares me is how sea level is going to reduce the amount of human food out there. So once you start reducing food to the planet with billions of people, that leads to catastrophe.
The late prophet Edgar Cayce had, in one of his trances, came up with a scenario that I think it would be like St. Louis, where I go most of the time, would be the new west coast of the United States because of rising sea levels. Is that conceivable?
Well, it's not going to be quite that dramatic, but what will happen is that you have to recognize most of the rice grown in the world, and rice feeds a very significant proportion of the world. Most of the rice fields are right at sea level or below sea level, and all of that is going away. So you can move up the hill. But what I'm going to find that society will keep doing, of course, is we will have to move airports. George, how many times have you flown into a country or a city, and that airport is right next to some big body of water.
A lot of times.
Railroads. It's all the time. And most of the highways, coastlines always have a highway upon them. What is it going to cost to move every coastal airport, every coastal road, every coastal railroad, and a lot of the important agricultural fields? It's going to cost a lot of money.
Even if you can do it. I mean, you've got to find the space. Airports take up a lot of land, right?
They absolutely do. Seattle is going to build a new runway. The cost of a new runway, one runway, is $1 billion. But now, at least the Seattle airport is high enough that it's going to take a lot of sea level rise to get it. But San Francisco is going to have to totally replace their airport. Sydney, Australia, Osaka, Japan, Honolulu. It goes on and on and on. All these airports are going to have to be moved because we are not going to be able to stop the sea level rise that's built into the system. If we reduce the amount of CO2 going in the atmosphere, we can slow it and ultimately limit what it will be. I think we'll have 10 feet based built into the system that we're never going to get away. If we've got 10 feet, it's inevitable, 10 feet higher seas and the storms that go off them. So societally, CNN years ago tried to have an estimate of what it would cost just to change the grain elevators and the ports and all the cranes on ports. Because if sea level goes up, all these docks, unless they're docks, they have to be replaced. And that alone is just $1 trillion just for several feet of sea level. And that's just the ports. So it's a money problem. And for the money problem, how do you spend? It's triage. What do you spend? What cities do you save?
Are these sea levels things that could be or will be?
Oh, these are will-be's.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely will-be's. I mean, there's 4 feet built into the system just from the amount of heating in the oceans today. And every treaty that we try to put out to slow the amount of CO2 going up, none of them are going to work, and none of them are going to take hold because people back away from it.
And what's the time period for the will-be?
Well, certainly we're going to have 3 to 5 feet by 2100 in the best scenario. But the worst scenario is looking at these big Antarctic ice sheets. And there have been times in the past when there have been total failure of these. And that would be a 10-foot sea level rise in 5 years. So that is certainly a possibility before 2100. Not just the 3 to 5 feet, but add 10 more. And that would be a sudden 10-foot rise.
So some of us could really witness this now.
Yeah, well, this is certainly people have been scared looking at the gigantic icebergs that are increasing coming out of Antarctica. And I've been there 4 times, George, and I was able in those times just looking at the glaciers and in my lifetime how those glaciers have retreated. But it's just a really scary place down there, and just seeing how quickly the ice is melting.
Is this all man-made global warming? Are you a proponent of that?
No, not man-made, not all of it. I mean, if we could turn off the volcanoes, maybe that's what the show ought to be, turn off the volcanoes, and we're home free. But we're not going to be able to turn off the volcanoes. And as the last few weeks have shown us, is that these things are just happily popping away like crazy. We are not, it's not all from humans, but it's wrong to say that none of it is from humans. We are a contributor, just as so much else is on this planet. And an awful lot of it's not us and our machines, but it's the way we've transformed the different animals that are present. Cows are terrible global warmer producers. All that cow methane, as we increase the number of animals that produce methane, it's part of the parcel.
Too bad we couldn't come up with some huge round global balls that we could drop into the eye of the volcanoes, huh?
Well, that'd be fun to do, but it's certainly, as I think we both agree, time for we as a society and a civilization to stop bickering and maybe stop putting so much money into military budgets, because this is sort of money going into something that none of us get hopefully ever used, but it's just wasted money. We need solutions. We need to be working together.
Do these things happen to all active planets?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Again, we know so little about planet Earth because it's the only one of its kind that we know of. We don't know how rare it is or how not rare it is, we don't know. If there's thousands or millions or trillions of them out there. But the more we do learn, the more special the place does look. And what we do know is that there is certainly nothing in our solar system with our present technology that we could move large number of humans to. If the Earth has a catastrophe that makes it much less livable, we're not going to be able to live on Mars. We're not. It'd be easier to live in the bottom of the deepest ocean than colonize Mars. So that idea that maybe we could just move to the next place, and I think movies give us the sense, oh, no, there's tons of planets out there. Who cares? No, this is a rare Earth.
What got you into paleontology, biology, astrobiology? What was your interest when you were younger?
Dinosaurs, of course. When I was a kid, there were books by the great paleontologist Roy Chapman Andrews, a little book called All About Dinosaurs.
Did you have those little rubber dinosaur toys?
You know, I did, and I had all that stuff, but just the thought of being able to go out there. Look, childhood could be hard for everybody, good and bad and everything else, but every kid wants to escape. And what's a cooler escape, cooler than thinking about dinosaurs and these great things? I'm just lucky enough I never had to grow up. I get to keep playing with the dinosaurs.
You did it.
It's been fun.
My favorite little rubber dinosaur was my T-Rex.
I love the T-Rexes, and I may have actually done something fun. I've been working with a TV group, and I think we're going to be able to pull off a brand new show about dinosaurs.
Well, that would be cool. Peter, we're going to take a break, then we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next hour on Coast to Coast. So the lines are open. Make the call. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.